This is a good one.
It is good.
This makes me feel like we're 80s buddy cops.
I was gonna say, it's got some good 80s vibes.
I'm digging it.
Hmm?
Top Gun.
Oh, I can see that too. Yeah.
Highway to the Danger Zone.
This is what happens when you type in Kenny Loggins into APM.
Nice. Love it.
They nailed it. Good for them. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. We're live from the Kintech studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at dunbarlumber.com. Canucks play the Preds tonight in Nashville. They'll be back in a playoff spot if they win, with Calgary losing a couple in a row here, the Canucks winning a couple in a row. And per our guy, Dan Murphy, who is on the ground in Nashville, Thatcher Demko getting the start after a couple straight wins for Kevin Lankinen, which means I was right.
You're right.
I was correct. We got a big argument for some reason about this yesterday on the show.
It was that we were talking about what we thought they would do, and you were talking about
thank
what,
you.
Oh, nice.
Thank
slow
you.
Claps.
Thank you.
Congrats, Jamie. I actually wonder, do you think the Canucks, because if I had to guess, like if I had to have guessed, if you told me Demko gets one game on this road trip, I would have guessed Dallas. He's historically performed very well in that building.
Okay.
He's historically performed very well against that team. We can always remember that robbery on Wyatt Johnston.
Yeah.
Early in the season last year.
Pete DeBoer teams as well.
Yeah, that's right. He's in DeBoer's head. We know that for
tormenting
sure.
Pete DeBoer.
Who doesn't? So the... So I would have guessed Dallas. I wonder, do you think the Canucks maybe feel like Nashville has too much familiarity
with Lankinen?
With Lankinen, their former backup?
That could be part of it. If you're strategizing the spot to get Thatcher Demko in, which, by the way, oof, that it's almost February, and it's like, we got to really dig in and see where we want the comfortable spot for Thatcher Demko.
I heard Kevin Woodley on the radio, I can't remember if it was this morning or yesterday, saying that the only goaltender with a worse adjusted save percentage in the league's Philip Grubauer, who was on waivers today.
Wow.
I mean,
that's tough.
Very tough. So yeah, I mean, I'm curious. I'd be very curious to know what exactly went into the Canucks' decision in net tonight. I guess the other thing you could add is Lankinen has lost twice to Nashville
this year, right?
This year,
yeah, yeah. So I can understand.
Granted, he only gave up one goal.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, it's pretty tough to hold that one against
in the loss on January 3rd. But yeah,
I am curious though how much it is a product of the thought process I was getting into yesterday, right? Which is like, we need Thatcher Demko. Long term, we need Thatcher Demko, or at least we need to gather as much evidence as we can about Thatcher Demko and his ability to get back up to speed. So we're just going to have to bite the bullet and put in a guy who's been just above Philip Grubauer so far this year in the NHL and kind of hope for the best, because obviously it's far from ideal. You'd way rather, I think, ride Lankinen if you're just focused on the playoffs at this point. But man, I don't think you can get away from the importance of Thatcher Demko and what he means long term as well. By the way, not only were you and Dom ganging up on me for that take yesterday, as soon as we got off the air, I saw Beck and he was like, "You're out of your mind. What are you talking about? Is that a bit or something?" I was like, "No. Why is everyone so mad at me for this?"
Love that from Bick.
So I got to rub it in Bick's face as well when I see him later today. All right, 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. It's the Canucks and the Nashville Predators tonight. And, of course, we'll go through this more in the whiteboard as well in the final segment. But in addition to Thatcher Demko starting, looks like Dakota Joshua is going to make his return to the lineup. And Max Sasson and Elias Pettersson come out. So Sasson comes out for Joshua. We'll see who goes in for defenseman Elias Pettersson. I should be mindful of clarifying that nowadays. But defenseman Elias Pettersson comes out. We'll see who goes in for him. I'm fascinated to see what kind of effort we get from the Canucks tonight as a whole. You know, we heard the no comment clip from JT Miller. certainly didn't look thrilled about being asked the question, quite understandably. Having said that, he did answer some straight hockey questions immediately after it. So it's not as if he was storming out or anything. But as much as Rick or as Jim Rutherford says, like, hey, they've been dealing with this already, so I don't think it's going to change anything. This is a really difficult position, I think, for the players to be in, coming off a couple of straight wins, and now you are back front page around the NHL. Your president is coming out almost kind of declaring that this core is not going to get it done together. They're going to have to make these big changes. I'm fascinated to see what the team's response looks like tonight. And I'm not even saying like, can they come together and will this galvanize them? Because I don't think that's what Rutherford was doing here. I've seen some people say, is this him putting pressure on them to try to get their act together and clean things up? I don't think you talk about it in terms of this core can't do it if that's your goal. I think you talk about it in terms of our best players haven't been good enough. We really need more from them. They need to mature. You can say all that stuff. Patrick Alvin did it. I don't think you go as far as Jim Rutherford did if your goal is to just put pressure on them to turn things around with you. I think it's a whole other thing now. But I am fascinated just to see, like, how do they respond? This is a really difficult, really interesting position for an NHL team to have to go out and play a game after what your president said this week.
It certainly would seem like a feat for the Canucks to manage an average work rate tonight, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's sort of what you're getting at?
Yeah. Not that I'm going to, like, throw them a parade if they do. No. You know what I mean? It's they're there, and they're here in large part because of their own doing.
For sure. Well,
it's more just, like, curiosity more than anything else, you know?
Well, and I just think, I honestly do think that a big part of what we're seeing, you know, might be to, hey, look, like, if you are the group, right, you're not going to show me by going on a run before the Four Nations break. Like, let's maybe you stack the deck against them and see if you still get a response. Don't ever count out the habit that especially very experienced hockey general managers occasionally fall into of, like, testing people.
I get that. This feels different than me.
I agree.
To me, no.
Because, as
I said,
I think this was shooting from the hip straightforward. And I think if anything, this was, like a turf fight.
Yeah.
As opposed to anything else.
If your goal is to challenge JT Miller and Elias Pettersson, there's a template for doing that.
Yes.
The things you talk about, the things you call out, right? Their effort, their commitment. Hey, we need our leaders to be leaders. We need our best players to be our best players. They're not consistently. We've seen those interviews. Very different than
this kind of can't do it.
Exactly.
And in fact, we don't think they can ever do it.
We don't think they'll ever be able to do it.
Yeah.
That's not how you go about motivating veterans to play better in the NHL. Maybe Jim Rutherford thought he had to break new ground. He's like, well, we've tried the other way. Let's ramp it up a little bit and see what we get. But I don't think that was a primary motivation from Jim Rutherford here going out and speaking to the media or speaking to Gary Mason specifically like that. If you get it, maybe it's some gravy. Maybe it's like, okay, maybe it makes things a little bit easier, but I don't think that's what his first goal was here.
Can I ask you two a question?
Sure, Dom.
Can you guys help me understand why there are fans out there who still believe that these two can lead this team to any sort of cup contention? If you don't have it between the ears to deal with this, how do you have it between the ears to make a cup run?
So are there people that think these two can do it? You know what I mean? I think there's a lot of people that want
an afternoon show on this station that still believes.
I think there's a lot of people that want one of them to do it. You know what I mean? That are like, oh, trade Miller or get Petey out of here, but keep the other one. I think that's a pretty common sentiment. And I know what you're saying, like Sat and Dan have said that, you know, the best options for them to stay here and figure it out.
I just don't get that.
Well, I don't disagree in a way. That would be amazing. It's just, I think the difference is how much of a likelihood you assign to that possibility. You know what I mean? Because, yeah, if all of a sudden JT Miller and Elias Pettersson patched things up and became these incredible professionals and they're leaders on the team and they're representing the franchise in the right way and they find new levels to their game and, you know, Elias Pettersson is the hardest worker on the team all of a sudden, yeah, like, keep them around, of course. That'd be amazing. It's just, how likely do you think that is? And how likely it is holding on to that faint hope worth passing up on the opportunity to trade one of them. And so that's what I think the difference is. Not that it wouldn't be. Of course it would be the best option if they could figure things out. I just don't think they're going to. And Jim Rutherford apparently doesn't think they're going to either.
Very explicitly doesn't.
I just don't like, I don't like entertaining that conversation as if there's some realistic opportunity for that to happen.
Yeah. It, you know what? You're right. It feels like fan service.
Yeah.
But the problem, the what I think the reason it does still come up, though, is because I'm saying, like, oh, there's so little likelihood of that happening. But the trading them and then retooling in a year to keep convince Quinn Hughes to stay and put a contender around him, like, that's not exactly an easy path either. So you're kind of being forced to choose between two paths that are very, very difficult. And yeah, maybe I think the keep them and everything turns out path is even less likely than the other one. I do. But it's not as if the other one is like, oh yeah, that'll be no problem. No problem. Just do that and everything will work out. That's really difficult as well. So I get not wanting to make that choice at some level. I think sometimes when you're in these situations, you feel like doing the passive thing is like equivalent to not making a choice in some way. You know what I mean? Like, this is kind of philosophical, but it's like, well, the choice that involves me trading them, that's a bummer and there's a lot of risk there. So I'm just not going to do anything, but that's still making a choice. And my point all along here, you know, going back a couple weeks ago when I basically said, like, I don't care about the return in the JT Miller trade, just do it. My point all along is that doing nothing is a choice and there's incredible risk to doing nothing as well. And I think Jim Rutherford is echoing that a little bit here. Not that he's saying they're going to give him away, but you're recognizing that you're risking a lot, most notably Quinn Hughes and his prime with the Vancouver Canucks, by keeping these players. So I just think there's a lot of reasons. It's very difficult to face. You know, there's been so much emotional investment in these players. I get that. The path, if you trade them, is really difficult. All of those reasons. It's always easier to do the inactive passive thing than the active thing. All of that adds up to it. But even having said that, it feels like there's fewer and fewer people that are saying, oh, yeah, just keep them.
Also, this is not, there are management groups for whom you'd say, oh, I'm sure they'd, the passive path, you know, like there's a lot of like stay still type managers.
Yes.
You know, I don't think these, I don't think Rutherford and Alvin are.
Nope.
Like, I don't think that's what we're talking about when we're handicapping what they're likely to do. I think we're,
I think there are a lot of GMs who in this exact situation would be like, well, what do you want us to do? Trade one of these guys? No, of course not. We're just going to keep banging our heads against the wall. Like, I think there's absolutely general managers who would do that. Don't think it would be the right decision, but I think there's absolutely, to your point, rather than make the big, bold move, rather than risk losing a trade, rather than risk sending Elias Pettersson somewhere and he turns it around, that you would just sit on your hands and do nothing and hope it works out. That's a very common thing in the NHL. By the way, Elliot Friedman this week, I think it was on the Fan Hockey Show yesterday, reporting that the Buffalo Sabres, you know, have been having talks with the Canucks, interested in Elias Pettersson, but the Sabres are worried because, you know, they did the Reinhardt deal and then he turns into an amazing player, an even better player in Florida. You know, obviously Eichel goes to Vegas, leads them to a Stanley Cup, and they're like, oh, you know, we have this history of trading guys away and then they develop into these incredible players elsewhere. Like, you're the other team in this situation. You know what I mean? It's like, can't you recognize that? No. You're the one getting the super high upside player that's poised to turn things around and hit a new level. Why are you worried about this? Is the exact opposite. How is that your concern if you're the Buffalo Sabres? So baffling to me.
Do you want to hear this is probably the most personalized to me take you'll ever hear.
Okay.
Okay. And it's definitely something you won't hear anywhere else. You know when the probability of Buffalo as an Elias Pettersson suitor really struck me as remote?
When?
When the Buffalo Bills lost to the Kansas City Chiefs in the AFC final. And here's why.
See, that to me would have increased the likelihood. It's like, oh, we got to give our fans something to be happy about. Let's go get Elias Pettersson.
So here's the thing. The Buffalo Sabres really cut deep during the pandemic. In terms of staffing costs, the size of their front office is relatively small, right? I mean, they have Lindy Ruff, but for the most part, they've gone through lower profile coaches, really since Phil Housley. Now, Elias Pettersson, beyond this season, has a $10 million signing bonus, okay? And then 5-5-5-5-5 in every year that's not a potential lockout year. Do you know how much remaining signing bonus Tage Thompson has on his long-term contract?
Is it zero?
It's zero. Do you want to know how much Dylan Cousins has on his remaining contract?
Zero.
Zero. Jason Zucker got $1 million this year.
Good for him.
Alex Tuck?
Zero.
Zero. Rasmus Dahlin? Zero. Owen Power? Zero. Lukanen had zero. Zero remaining. Matias Samuelsson? Zero remaining. But they're going to take on this guy who has $35 million in lump sum payments due to him on an annual basis. Seems pretty contrary to the way that the Pegulas have run their hockey club.
Yeah.
Now, maybe if they got that good Super Bowl revenue, maybe. But I don't know. They're going to cut Pettersson a $10 million check on July 1st?
That's a fair question.
Strikes me as far-fetched, but I've been surprised before. Anyway, that's the most Thomas Durant's take you'll ever get.
If only Buffalo had gone to the Super Bowl.
Then maybe I'd buy it.
Dang NFL conspiracy. Screwing over the Canucks.
And we would have landed Dylan Cousins, too, if it wasn't for you and your pesky podcast host who's dating a superstar.
Even the officiating conspiracies in other leagues screw the Canucks over. That's tough.
Wow, yeah.
That's really tough. Okay, we'll take a break here. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Jason Bukla, really excited to chat with Books here on the other side here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Vic Nizar. Have your say and join me on The People's Show with big takes and even bigger bets weekdays 3 to 4 on Sportsnet 650 or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. We are broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Lots of thoughts coming in. We're going to chat with Jason Bukla here momentarily. Of course, from Sportsnet, former NHL scout as well. We'll do the whiteboard in the final segment here, get you all caught up on everything surrounding the Canucks and their game against the Nashville Predators tonight. But as mentioned, now joining us, as he does every Wednesday here on the show, from Sportsnet, former director of amateur scouting in the NHL, our pal Jason Bukla. Books, what's going on, man?
Oh, not too much. Anything going on out there this week?
Just a little bit.
Well, so Books, I'm curious to get your take on this because, yeah, more canisters of jet fuel are exploding in the Vancouver market, and yet, did we learn anything?
No.
Right?
No, we didn't learn anything new.
Yeah.
We learned that for whatever reason, it just keeps going and going and going and going. It's exhausting.
It's the energy buzzer, Energizer Bunny feud.
Yeah, buddy. It is. It's absolutely exhausting. The team comes off a couple of pretty good efforts, and I'm really amazingly, one of the positives that I think that is overshadowed here a lot is the group hasn't gone on one of those long, extended losing streaks. They're wildly inconsistent, obviously, which probably speaks to the mood more than anything else, the preparation and how you can prepare on any given day, depending on your mood. But it's not like they've gone completely in the hole or in the tank, pardon me. And it's truly kind of amazing that it hasn't happened, because I'm sure that the coaching staff especially are just exhausted by this entire drama that just keeps playing out. It's crazy to me.
Well, I was almost wondering if part of the reasoning behind it from Rutherford was maybe take a little heat off of Rick Tocchet, and yeah, he's going to be asked questions about this, but he's also drawn a lot of criticism here in the market for his coaching of the team this year, inability to score and all that. Now that's not the primary talking point, let's put it that way, this week.
Yeah, no, that maybe that is. Maybe that's one of the byproducts of the decision yesterday to go for the article to break there in the Globe and Mail, and then the fallout from that, all the talk that's been endless. I couldn't turn on my TV or turn on my computer or any, even this morning. It's like, gee, this is unbelievable. It just goes and goes and goes. So, yeah, it's maybe take a little bit off the coach, the distraction. Maybe, I guess.
Yeah, who knows?
I'm just at such a loss for words on it now, guys. I feel like I don't know what else we can say about it. Except for this, I came to the conclusion yesterday for sure in my mind. You know, a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, I was like, something's got to give here. One of these guys got to go by, call it Monday, when I was in studio with you guys or with you, Jay. Mm-hmm. And now I honestly believe that there's going to be so much stink left over if only one of them goes, that they both got to go. I just don't know how the group can look across the room and if one of them are left standing, if you will, and say that, you know, we're not like how can you pull for that guy still? There's just so much that has brought down the entirety.
Yeah. And look, I've never seen an NHL head coach pleased that there's additional noise around their team. That's never once occurred. Like, a coach has never had this sort of grenade thrown into their room and been like, thank you. Not once. That never happened in the NHL.
No, I've been around a lot, and a lot of things, and you and I specifically were around a lot of things in Florida. Think about it. And I can't recall anything, and there was a lot of noise around our group for a variety of different reasons a lot of times, but I can't recall anything spilling out into, maybe it was the market, but even in our little market, I can't recall things spilling out into the big world the way that that this has here. It's just bananas.
So I've been thinking a little bit about Florida, not just my time there, but also Jimmy Butler over the course of the past week, because I've been following that story closely. For those who don't know, Jimmy Butler, you know, hard scrabble, irascible, winning NBA player, has been suspended indefinitely by the Heat. He's been advocating or agitating for a trade. And I think there's some analogies there between the Canucks situation and what we're seeing in Miami. But not necessarily just what we're seeing in Miami. I've been thinking about in the context of Jimmy Butler used to be teammates with Karl Anthony Towns, younger player, right? Mercurial. Was seen as one of those guys who maybe was like a little bit soft, a little bit unfocused, couldn't win the big one. And everyone thought Jimmy Butler was right because Cat was soft and unfocused and couldn't win the big one. And right now, Jimmy Butler, several years have passed, got to the finals a couple times, but didn't really get close. And right now, Jimmy Butler's like suspended again for being a bad teammate, basically. And Karl Anthony Towns, in a different situation, is the best player for the third best team in the NBA, which also is the toughest team in the NBA. And everyone's sort of looking at him very differently in terms of the vibes around him, in terms of the swagger that he's playing with. And I couldn't help but think of the echoes to the Minnesota Timberwolves situation. Like, when you've got a guy like Pettersson, who's maybe not Batman, right? And your rival team may be considering how he fits into your group, like, Are we at the point where he's a guy who should be looked at as a guy who can't win, sort of, you can't win with, or is there a way to design a team, an environment to get the most out of players like that, Books?
I think that there is a way to design it. Let's reference back to our Florida situation. So if you look in Florida, when Barkey, I'm not saying that Pettersson's Barkov, but
no.
But understand they're different people, but they're both really at the top of their game. They're for what they both bring to the table, they're exceptional players at the top of their game. I think we both agree with that. But the one thing that they both do have in common is that off the ice, that kind of quiet demeanor, they're not really the alpha dog in the room. Now Barkey wears the C, but there was a time there that Ekblad was the alpha dog in the room, even though that Barkey was wearing the C. And of course, you know, it's evolved since then. They've surrounded that in Florida, that type of personality who leads by example, but they've surrounded him with different types of bulldogs, if you will. But your bulldog has to respect the process of the star player. So look at Quinn Hughes. Quinn Hughes isn't going to be the loudest voice in the room all the time. He's obviously going to lead by example, and guys should want to play hard for their captain, who plays, you know, basically all night long and, you know, drags them into the fight. They should want to play hard for him no matter what. But here's where I'm going with it. When you surround enough of your star players with certain people that respect their process, because they don't drive it down because it's different than theirs, they respect their process, then maybe you're going to get more out of that player. And that's maybe what it is with Pettersson. Maybe he's, you know, been, it seems like they're oil and water, right? Like there's an expectation there. One goes about their business one way, one goes about their business the other way. But in the room there, guys, it doesn't seem to me as well that they can surround those two personalities to temper the flames a little bit. They don't have enough of that, because I don't know where the fallback is. It goes to Hughes and then it goes to where, you know? So, yeah, I think that it's a long answer, but I do believe that both these guys in a different environment now going forward, wherever that ends up being, if it ends up being like that, they're both going to end up performing at a high level. I believe that they will. They're both really good players. But this is for 4 years of nonsense and chasing games and everything. You build it up last year to the point where we feel good about it as an organization. You know, the three of us are talking about it, we feel great. And then in 4 months, it just goes to shambles like this. Like, how fragile was it really? Like, talk about misleading.
Yeah, no kidding. And, you know, to your point about surrounding the players with the right other types of players, I think maybe part of what's happened here in Vancouver is you look at, you know, go all the way back to the departure of Chris Tanev, and you can go as recently as Nikita Zadorov and Ian Cole, you know, throw Luke Shen in there, that maybe at different points there have been the right types of players to support these guys and keep everything, you know, on the tracks, but they haven't been kept consistently, or they've been allowed to walk too often. And I does kind of feel like you're at the point now where part of the issue is, okay, maybe there are ways you can smooth over a relationship like this, but not when it's gotten to this point. You know what I mean? Like, if the right steps had been taken 3 years ago, maybe we wouldn't be having this conversation. But from this point on, you might just be hooped.
Well, I think so. And that's the problem. You know, you are hooped in my estimation, because And I'm going to go back to some of those off-season decisions. Like Zadorov, the other night in Edmonton, when Hughes gets kind of, you know, horse-collared by Perry behind the net in the scrum, do you think that if Zadorov's on the ice, that's happening at that same time? I'm going to vote no. I doubt it. That Zadorov's going to go over there and he's going to do something. There's going to be a presence at the very least. If Luke Shen, that's a good example too. If Luke Shen, even Chris Tanev, right now in Toronto, arguably playing some of his best hockey. And I don't think it's with bias, because in Ontario, obviously you see the Leafs on TV all the time, but it's not even with bias. So yeah, you know, you're hooped with what's in the room right now because of the fact that the way that it's assembled can't support whoever's left over. So let's just assume it's Pettersson left over. So that makes your deal fragile, doesn't it? You're trying to get the most out of the deal if it's Miller, but at the same time, in the back of your mind, you're saying, well, if we keep Pettersson and we're bringing in whoever we're bringing in, is it going to make him better? Because the rest of the room right now probably isn't going to make him better. We kind of figured that out. So it's really it's a tough spot. And that's why I came to the conclusion that it's almost time for a clean slate that way. And that stinks. Like, it sucks for me to say that. I don't say that lightly. It's no fun for me to say that, but how can it's like your best friends, you know, you and your wife have two best friends and they divorce. And now you got a choice to make, you know, do I hang out with the wife or do I hang out with the husband? And, you know, let's be honest. The easiest thing is to say, they can, you know, maybe I don't want to hang out with either one of them for a while, you know? So, that's how I'm looking at it, fellas, and it's too bad because it's going to set the time. It's going to set the clock back a year and a half, maybe 2 years. And we talked about it last week. That affects Hughes's clock, doesn't it? Here you are wasting another year or two of one of the most elite talents in the entire National Hockey League.
Well, that timeline is fascinating. And I thought one of the other really interesting parts of Jim Rutherford's interview was just you know, how kind of crystal clear he was about what the path forward looks like if they do trade one or both of these players and what they're going to have to do. And it was basically, you know, look, we're not going to get first line caliber centers back. We might not even get second line caliber centers back for these guys in these deals, but we're going to have to take the assets we do get, plug some of them into our lineup, flip others to try to get impact pieces. And as he put it, you know, we can't do a full on rebuild because then Quinn Hughes is going to bolt. So we've got to put a contending team around him, in part using whatever assets we get back from Miller and or Pettersson trades. You know, from a front office perspective, like, how difficult does that process sound to you that Jim Rutherford laid out?
It's brutal right now. And so by this time, if I would be, let's just say we had a Zoom call today, the pro staff, and I was back on it. By this time, it's probably our 10th call on the same subject, and we're still going over the same list of players throughout the league. But you know what we are? Well, you know what's really happening? We're going over our B list now. We started with an A list, and you started with these targets, and you had some conversations, very likely, and an offer or two might have come to the forefront, and there's been speculation that there has been. Let's just think about a couple weeks ago to the New York Rangers offer. So if you assume that maybe that's their best offer because Carolina went in a different direction, if you assume that that's their best offer, what's that going to look like now? Like 2 weeks later, when they really know that you're backed into a corner, it gets worse. So you start getting to your B list and then maybe your C list. So yeah, you know, then you start saying, this is what will happen. The question will come up, well, for us to survive this and for us to get this player back, and I don't even want to speculate who that is, you're going to have to dip into your prospect pool because you know that's what's happening next. This team who you're going to make a deal with, they're going to say, okay, geez, you know, but we really like this player or we really like that player. And, you know, Tom Willander, you know, he wants to come out of school, we would assume, at the end of the year. And you guys really are swimming uphill right now. And, okay, well, we'll do this, but you're going to have to throw him into the equation. Now it just feels behind the scenes, as the front office, as the scouting staff and everything else, it stinks. It's no fun.
Books, if the Canucks go into Hail Mary to keep Hughes plan mode, right?
Yeah.
So I have two problems with this. I'll start with the first one. How likely is it that you succeed if I give you the following parameters? Within the next 18 months, right, by the time you enter the 2026 Stanley Cup playoffs, you've got to do it with a shot at least winning 7 games. At least winning 7 games. So you don't have to advance 2 rounds, but you have to at least win 7 games. Can you do that subtracting Pettersson and Miller from this roster?
Don't know. That's my honest answer. I don't know. Yeah, on one hand, I'll go with what I do. I'll go with my gut, and that is across the league in terms of restocking the roster with something that's going to be serviceable enough to do exactly what you just said. Probably not, you know. Probably not, and that's just the stark reality of it. Now, having said that, you might, if you look at the Calgary Flames, and they lost those veteran guys last year. Obviously, they shipped them out and trying to retool the roster. If you take a look at that, you know, the guys that they brought in, the Lombergs of the world, and obviously there's some other guys that have just taken a step forward, so the Coronados, et cetera. But if you kind of catch lightning in a bottle, I guess anything's possible. Well, what does that take? Well, that takes super elite goaltending too. And I'm curious to see where that goes, to be honest with you guys. Like, I have a lot of questions, not only this year, but moving forward. Demko needs a full summer and then a proper training camp, clearly. I would say, if you put me on the spot in the meeting, I'd say, yeah, not likely. It's going to take another couple of years. That's what I would say, because we're going to have to build up some other assets, transfer, to probably either internally increase their value and impact or shop outside the organization. But it takes time to do that all over again.
So now that we've had that conversation, this organization over the last 10 years has had the Hail Mary to get the Sedin twins surrounded by a team that they could contend again, right? So can't rebuild when you've got the twins. Then there was the Hail Mary to make sure that Pettersson wanted to stay, which worked, resulted in him signing, of course, and built that team we saw last year. And now we're in Hail Mary to keep Quinn Hughes territory. I mean, at what point does functioning in this way harm a program from building something sustainable?
Well, you're talking about culture. You're talking about sustaining culture. And once you do have a culture that's sustainable, it's almost difficult to let that go because everybody by that time has bought in so much. So what they were doing is chasing culture. And I thought that they had bottled it in the last year and a half or so. So I understand the sentiment. I understand the conversation. I can't go there. Like, I'm not even looking that far outside the box in the micro. I guess eventually we're going to, as an organization and the three of us, we'll have that discussion. What I am doing though, is I'm trying to zero in on how did we get here? If we knew last year that this was a real possibility, that it could be a powder keg that could explode at any time, why did both these guys get extended? Because, you know, that's where I'm at. That happened, and now we're here a year later. I don't want to involve anybody else in the organization. I don't want to drag them into this discussion. I don't want to drag Hughes. I don't want to drag any of our prospects. I don't want any of that noise. I want to just solve what I know for now and not speculate on the future. But I will say this, that I won't be fooled two times in a row by the next crop of people that come in, because it's too delicate. And if that means 2 years from now, we're in the exact same, if we're just a wild card team, 2-3 years from now, yeah, you're going to have to look at doing business a different way. And that comes with really hard decisions. And I'm not so sure the marketplace wants that. Imagine wasting the Hughes years because of other people, because he's given absolutely everything he can to this team. And I hope that doesn't happen.
Well, and the worst part now is, in some ways, it's out of your hands. Like we can all look back at the decisions that have led them to this point. But even now, I mean, from this point on, they could make a run of incredibly good moves. Quinn Hughes has 2 more years left on his deal before he's an unrestricted free agent. You know what I mean? Like,
I know. It's kind of out of your hands almost. I get it. So that's what I'm talking about. You lose grasp of culture, even if it's your captain, and there's so much noise. Let's say that in the next year and a half, they build it back up, guys. And then, again, the three of us are talking, or I guess especially me. I guess it was more me than even you guys, because you're more Debbie Downer than I am.
That's
so
right.
In the last year and a half, I've said it 100 times how I was impressed with the mm-hmm. culture, towing the rope in the same direction, et cetera. But I look like an idiot today. Like, I was fooled by it. So the next time around, let's say you build it back up, but now you're 6 months away from Quinn Hughes becoming a USA, and he knows internally that culture really doesn't exist, because clearly it didn't really exist this time. Maybe he knows that internally. Now you're really in a pickle. So, yeah, talk about a delicate situation, but this is, I don't know. I don't know. It's horrible how it's like a grass fire, and mm-hmm. and I don't know. And the inmates started running the asylum, and that's problematic. So you have to look inward too at how everybody handled this from a leadership perspective. I'm talking president, GM, directors of pro and whatever, coaches. You have to look inward too and say, how did we get fooled?
Yeah, it's a wild situation. You're absolutely right. Hey, before we let you go, Books, are you excited for the big Gavin McKenna, Landon DuPont matchup in the WHL tonight?
Listen, that is an exciting matchup. I didn't even look at that schedule today, but I was in that week that I was in Vancouver, obviously doing the coast. I was in Everett to watch them play. What a wagon that team is, by the way. Wow, are they fun to watch? Great building, great fans in Everett. But Landon DuPont, oh, jeez, is he ever good. So McKenna is great. DuPont is great, number two. They're both great, and it's great for hockey. So it'll be interesting when the Chicago Blackhawks rise to the podium in a year or two if they go outside the box and don't draft a guy like that. Like, they didn't draft my boy Ivan Demidov. Mistakes happen sometimes.
Well, hey, I don't know about next year for McKenna, 2026, but who knows? If we're still on the air, 2027 draft, Books, maybe we'll be talking about Landon DuPont to the Vancouver Canucks. We'll see.
Sorry, what? Why are we not going to be talking about it with McKenna? Because of Operation Keep Quinn Hughes?
Yes. I don't think it's going to happen next year.
You see what he just did there? He just cracked open a whole new conversation piece. Yeah. As you're walking me out the door, you throw that in.
I'm just saying, it's got a couple interesting prospects coming up through the dub over the next couple of years. Very, very interesting.
I got to stop thinking in the broad landscape with you guys. You're driving me crazy. I got to go have a nap after I'm done here.
Books, we appreciate it. Thanks for doing this.
Nighty night, buddy.
See you guys. Hang in there.
Thank you, buddy. That is Jason Buchla from Sportsnet, former NHL scout. Yeah, he wasn't even thinking the Canucks angle. Of course, that's why I'm bringing it up. But yeah, I don't think it's happening for next year, sadly.
God, I'm not. I hate knowing as much about the draft as I used to know about the draft.
I will say it's not going to happen, but I think I first jokingly brought up Gavin McKenna on the show in like December 2022. If they ended up drafting him in June 2026, that would be the greatest moment in show history if that somehow after almost 4 years came to fruition. But sadly, I don't think that's going to be in the cards. All right, 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. We got one final segment coming up here. We'll do the whiteboard. Maybe we'll hear from Rick Tocchet as well. Talk to the media a little bit for a few minutes down in Nashville, although not about Jim Rutherford. We'll see if we can get some of your texts in too. It is Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650.